Welcome everybody to hashtag Team Early Childhood Podcast. This week we have the fantastic Dr. Eunice Lumsden with us. Hi Eunice.
Hi Aaron.
Are you okay?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Good.
Eunice is going to be talking to us about shaping a new reality for early childhood, and I'm so excited to have you on our podcast.
Thank you. I think I'm excited to be here.
Would you like to tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Right. I'm Eunice Lumsden. I'm far too old now, so I've been around quite a bit. What would you like to know about me? I grew up in Birmingham, and I think my experience in Birmingham shapes everything that I do, and ended up at Northampton University by default. From school, I went on to Trent Poly then, where you work, and had four amazing years, where I studied social work and applied social sciences. And after that, because I fell in love while I was at university and met my husband, ended up living in Northamptonshire because he had a job to come to. So I followed him down here. But I have a quite big part of my heart still in Nottingham. It taught me so much about myself and so much about life and the lived experiences of those that I was working alongside as a student social worker.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. I will put that out there. It's such a lovely city. Okay, so Eunice, obviously everybody knows the style of the podcast, that there are six questions that we ask. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that you've seen the questions before the session. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to be hopefully scaring you off and thinking, hang on a minute, that wasn't the question that we had.
Yeah.
But basically, everyone knows that I'll ask you five questions, but number six is always the same for our listeners. And that's always about wishes. And I'm really, really keen to ask you what your wishes will be for the future. So, hello, everyone. Again, we're going to start with question number one to Eunice. So we all know you, Eunice, as the voice of our sector. And I've got to say, you've mentored so many of us through early childhood, specifically within our academic arena. But where did it all begin for you?
Okay, I think I just want to go back and say just something about acknowledging and thanking you for your kindness. But I don't see myself as having a voice for the sector, because I'm not quite sure what the sector is. When I looked at that question, I really thought, well, what do you mean by the sector? Because the sector of early childhood is beyond complex. It's beyond difficult. It's full of different professionals, practitioners, agencies. It's what, when I did my PhD, I termed the flexible space of early childhood. And within that space, there are multiple voices. And the most important voice, which often is invisible, even when we see it, is the voice of children and the voice of their parents, families, carers. And I think that is the core of why what I do what I do and why I've ended up where I am. I never, ever, ever expected to do what I'm doing. At all. It was never on my agenda. I spent 20 years working as a social worker in child protection and adoption and fostering, and learned so much from that. And at a point in my career, I was either going to go and do more therapeutic work so that I was more enabling of those children and families I was working with, or I was actually going to go and change policy. And in order to change policy and to try and get into that arena, to have the voices of the most vulnerable in our society heard, because to me they were really invisible, I needed to get a PhD. And by default, I ended up at the University of Northampton. I ended up in early childhood rather than in social work, though my intention was to go into social work. And the whole thrust of what I do is to try and raise people's awareness and change attitudes so that we can improve the quality of what we do in early childhood, to either prevent children coming into the care system, yeah, or if they do, ensure that they have had the best quality early childhood experience, and that to help them with their later life outcomes. I think I've been really privileged in my life to work alongside people whose life courses have been influenced by their very earliest experiences, and working with adults who've been adopted, adolescents in the care system, etc., etc., has taught me about so much about what we could do more effectively in early childhood, to enable families and children to have better outcomes, a much more strengths approach than we do. Is that helpful?
Because that's really helpful.
It's really mixy, because I'm not a sector person. No. I'm not, you know, put me in a nursery. No, if that's what you're talking about, the sector. The sector is that early childhood period, and children and families.
And I think it really, I think one thing that we have to realise is that the podcast is about early childhood and not just, you know, early years. And I think, actually looking at the voice and everything that you've just said, this is why early childhood is so important, because it's actually more than one concept, which is the reason why early childhood, Team Early Childhood was set up. So thank you, Eunice. That's really, really useful. So the discussion that you came to me with is about shaping a new reality for early childhood, and I think it's quite pertinent at this moment in time. So could you explore this concept a little further with us and tell us what you mean by that shaping of a new reality?
Okay, regardless of not of the situation that we're in now, the message is that I think I've been giving for years, while I've been very fortunate to have a voice somewhere, has been that we can and must do better, that we continue to work in our silos, that our qualification levels in early childhood are not where they should be, especially in the early childhood education and care sector, that professionals still work in silos and we still don't have a joined up approach. And I suppose I want to put a caveat there, that I was very lucky to move into higher education at a period when the former Labour government was investing heavily in families, children, policy for children and early years. And that period of growth and development was quite immense. And just as we were beginning to see change, we were beginning to see professionals and practitioners coming together in children's centres, and that vision happen, we had a change of direction in political ideology. And reflecting on that backwards now over the last 10 years, I'm doing quite a lot of research on it. Everything that we built up in that previous 10-year period was unfolded really, really quickly. And so we've ended up, I think now, with a more diverse system, more siloed approach. And actually, we've less support for families and a less clear policy for families. And while we're going through the sort of the COVID thing, where people are going, not surprisingly, through that cycle of loss and grief, etc., one of the things that's really concerning me for the future is, I was trying to put the words for it, because at the moment, actually finding words to explain some of the things that you're thinking are quite difficult, because of the circumstances. But the whole policy thrust has been for getting families off benefits and getting families into work, and that the free childcare, which is amazing because the current government has continued to invest in the sector quite heavily. There's, you know, there is millions of pounds still going into the sector in different ways. We know there are huge issues, and I can't claim to understand all of the financial areas for those in practice in early childhood education and care. But what is going to happen next? when we have high unemployment that's coming, when those families that were in the working poverty sector can't get work, and therefore they're not going to be entitled to early childhood education and care provision. So for me, a new reality is that our reality that we have at the current time continues not to work. And research, for example, the latest research from the SEED project that Oxford have been doing, you know, is reinforcing that children aren't necessarily getting everything that they should be getting when they go to early childhood education care centres, and that their best learning is in the home environment. And then for me, the home environment and the support for parents isn't there in the way that it was before. The groups aren't there. The extra support that children's centres were providing has gone. And there is no replacement for that, because across England, and I can only talk about England, the provision is very patchwork and it is very different. So in some areas, things are much better than in other areas, etc. Yeah. So for me, in shaping a new reality is actually, I think the child and the family have somehow been lost in a lot of the debates.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's from my heart what I'm struggling with, because what I see is the intergenerational impact of the challenges that families make, and the impact of the decisions they make. And where is the support? Where is the parenting support that people need? And what's been really interesting for some of the things that I've been involved with globally over the last few weeks, is that everybody is saying the same thing, that have been providing early intervention provision for families, is that some families have found immense strength over this period and have been able to articulate a lot more what they want. And I think that's fascinating, because I sometimes... what I hope is, and I don't always see it, is that we don't have a half full approach. We don't have a strengths approach for families and children always. I'm not saying that that's global. I'm not saying that's universal. And I'm not saying there isn't, you know, amazing things being done out there. But in that business of the flexible space of early childhood, there is an awful lot of overlap in what different professions, different third sector groups, etc., are doing. And somewhere in all of that, it isn't working, because if you look at our children's outcomes and how they're measured in school, the gap seems to be getting worse. The language, you know, we've got this real focus by the government on language, words, etc. And there are some major issues being shown in those statistics. And then in the safeguarding statistics and looked after children statistics, you know, they tell a different picture. That we're not actually, although we invest millions and millions and there's loads of professionals working in that space, actually, are we really affecting change? And that's why I think that we really need to reflect very carefully on what we're doing and why we're here and the purpose of that.
Yeah, I agree. So that leads us on to the next point. So could you, for our listeners, could you pinpoint any key research or documents that they could go and look at to start kind of looking at the concepts that you've just talked about, to support the discussion? So a couple that you could pinpoint?
Right, I think the Marmot report from 10 years ago and the one that's just come out now, just before COVID, are really quite crucial in looking at the public health issues, because the health of our nation, the health of our young children, the health of families, and the impact across the life course are absolutely key.
Yeah.
So I think that those reports are really important. I actually think going on the DfE webpage and downloading the new the report that came out earlier this year by the SEED one, the work that they've been doing on looking at children's outcomes. It's quite a large project. I've read them again this morning because I knew we were doing this, and I was thinking, am I really reading what I'm, is that really saying what I think it's saying, which, you know, one of the findings is that early child education and care settings are not making a difference. Actually, it's the home environment, and that our most deprived children seem to be doing better in when their care is provided by other family members and friends and relatives rather than in settings. And I'm thinking, am I reading this? Am I really reading what's coming out of this? And I think that it really helped people to read that report. Because I think it holds a mirror up to us about what we're actually doing, how we're achieving that in a very complex, very, very complex situation and environment. The other report, which is a more up-to-date one, again, is on the Early Intervention Foundation, and there's a report about adverse childhood experiences and a review of the literature that's just come out. And again, that I sort of hold a torch up to that, because there is a lot of I've got to get my words right here, but it's very easy to get on bandwagons. So the adverse childhood experience language is good. It's relived. It's put focus back on that area, but it's not telling us anything that we haven't known for decades and decades and decades. Does that make sense? I hope to people. But it's given a label that's enabled people to look at that again. And look at trauma and look at that. Please note that they're always really quite negative talks rather language rather than a strengths approach to families. And that's quite good, because that's really saying, you know, don't get on the bandwagon. This is really, really important. But think about what we have to do. It's just not solved by scoring people on the amount of ACEs that they have. Etc. You know, what we know is that children and families that face the challenges of poverty, face the challenges of difficult life experiences of domestic violence, face increased challenges across their life course, and it impacts on their health and economic viability and all of those things. But we also know that children in working families across the spectrum of people in society face challenges as well. So there's quite a lot of things that we need to unpick and constantly be working on.
And do you think that those documents that you've detailed are a good starting point for people to go and read? And
I think there is so much material out there. And what's really, really interesting for me is that I look at my big shelves. I'm sitting in my study and I have bookshelves full of books. And over the last 20 years, there's been a budgeting of books on early childhood.
Yes.
We never had that 20 years ago. You know, there's a lot of people doing a lot of research, writing a lot of books, and they're all, you know, they go in waves. So I look at my bookshelves and my own writing. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people were writing a lot about multi-professional working, interagency working, working together. And that's fallen off now. Nobody's writing about that. You know, there's a whole range of books on different approaches and all of that that are more prevalent now. There were a load of books in the sort of the 2006 to 2010, 11, 12 period on professionalisation of our workforce, Every Child Matters, all of those issues, which are, again, are not topical, at the moment. So there is loads of documents. There's the Graham Allen Early Intervention from 2011, from all sorts of different disciplines that are telling us that early childhood is a very, very complex period. But actually the literature is more siloed rather than joined up. Does that make sense? So yeah, those I just thought were really putting things in context.
Okay. No, that's really helpful.
Yeah, and they're modern ones. They're up to date ones because there is nothing that isn't new. And I suppose I just want to share a sentence really, and a thought around why things happen and why things are, is that we can have this knowledge. This knowledge isn't new. I've been, you know, qualified social worker for well over 40 years, working with children and families. The things that we're seeing now are not new, you know. The lack of inclusion in society, the lack of, you know, all sorts of things that are going on at the moment are not new. Our knowledge about the impact of abuse is not new. Our understanding of the impact on the brain and all and over the life course, you know, has now got more scientific data. We have more research that confirms practice wisdom. But often we can know that knowledge, but actually turning that knowledge into action is more difficult. So it has to be topical.
Yes.
To make the change. Something has got to happen. So you might have the death of Victoria Climbier that caused a change. Actually, we're still not there. So it's a major thing. But often we're just still bystanders looking in. And in order to create that new reality, early childhood education and care practice, which to me is really important, cannot be a bystander. It can't be waiting for policy to come down from government to tell us what to do. We have to become more active in doing what is right for children at every level. I hope I'm making sense.
I'm interested. I'm listening. I think you are making sense, and I think really I talk very much about our voice, you know, within the early childhood sector, and, you know, using our, you know, instead of actually waiting for everybody to do it, we need to be proactive in doing it. And I think, you know, what you're doing is you're talking very much about we can't wait for policy to make those child-centred changes, and it's really important that we hold true to our child-centered values, really, and don't be an outsider looking in, and actually be part of that.
I think that's what I'm saying. So that's why it comes back to your first question. I'm known as the voice of the sector. I don't claim that. That isn't a
A label. That's my claim.
Thank you. I appreciate that, the sector owns itself, but. The actual early childhood education and sector is in search of itself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And where it fits. And we had direction. We were going somewhere. People felt energy. My gosh, you know, children are being heard. And, you know, people were looking from around the world at the amazing things that were going on. Yeah, and I'm not saying there are not still amazing things happening. But I think it is now... It is now different, and some of that difference is I'm doing some research on practitioners' understandings of poverty at the moment again and how they mediate that, and there's some really interesting themes coming out of that which are different to when I did the research with Donald Simpson that we started 10 years ago on looking at the same thing because we wanted to do a comparison. And one of the interesting things is how maybe health visitors would say to a children's centre and still do to the maintained nurseries where they are, where there are them. Look, there's this family. They could do with just a little bit of extra support, but actually there isn't the fight that, you know, they haven't got the money to pay for extra childcare. Yes, and nurseries and children's centres could manage that. And provide that service and just did it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They're asking the same questions of the PVI sector as well, because the children's centres aren't there to take that up, and not everywhere has nurseries, etc. And the the private voluntary sector want to, you know, they can, they want to be able to provide that additional support. And we'll try, but actually they're working on a business model, so they're working for a profit, and there isn't much profit. Well, the profit I think is variable; it depends on the size of the company. So they haven't got the wriggle room to give that additional support. Yeah, but why should they be, when we should have those systems in place? Because family support, you know, sometimes families just need just a little bit of help just to get them over something. I sound very reflective about it, is because I'm doing a lot of thinking, and sometimes it's very difficult to put the words that you're feeling and the emotion that you're having about what's going on around you into words. And also, I'm not saying anything different. I've been saying the same thing. I just want to stand on a mountain and say, why don't people get it? Children aren't little pieces. They're a whole. And you have to understand holistic childhood development in order to make a change.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, Eunice. So that leads us onto number four. So we all know that you published, I remember emailing you, didn't I? And I did a review online, and your editors, you know, the people who, your publishers retweeted it. It was such a pertinent book, and that was called Child Protection in the Early Years, a Practice Guide, in 2018.
Yeah.
So what prompted you to write that book?
Lots of tears. What prompted me? My passion. Well, I have lots of passions, lots of things that I really do. Child protection has taught me. That's the area that I worked in for so long. And I wanted to provide a book that was accessible to people so that they could just understand it, but actually understand their own responsibility.
Yes.
And the more holistic nature of child protection. Okay. And there were lots of things that I was seeing and experiencing within the sector, and I was thinking, but nobody's doing anything to actually support the children.
Yeah.
You know, children that go into early childhood education care who are separated from their parents for whatever reasons need plus, plus, plus. Those children who are living in family contexts where they're having poverty of parenting as well as all the other issues need plus, 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 plus. So, but I didn't see that happening. I didn't see a holistic approach to children. I didn't see, and I don't see always, purposeful, holistic planning for a child, and that being carried on through school. That understanding that if you're not, you know, very basically, if you're not living in an environment which is rich in language, what do you do with children? You ensure that they have the most richest language development. You think about, well, what do children need in order to survive in the world today? So they need to problem solve. They need to be able to ensure that their body is as healthy as possible, that their eyes are tracking properly, that they are able to do fine and gross motor movements. So we know that for some children whose lived experiences aren't what we would want them to be, that they need to be able to support, to learn to problem solve. And we're not applying our theory and our understanding and research into our practice. And that's what the book was about. It was about giving this real basic knowledge, and that safeguarding isn't this tick box thing. You know, have you done your safeguarding training? It's understanding that holistic thing. So it's not just that the child's been hit or emotionally abused. Their attachment patterns might have been impacted upon. That has an effect on your key worker. So if you've got a child that's in and out of the care system and their key worker keeps changing, that just adds another layer to them. Now, if you've got children in your settings, which is all children, whose cortisol levels are high.
Yeah.
If they're experiencing greyness, children reflect the adults in their lives. So if the staff with them are looking grey and miserable,
yeah,
that's not good. Does that make sense? So what I wanted to do was create, and I had great debates with the publishers, because there's a real thing with publishers to put pictures of children on the front of covers. Yeah. And I didn't want that. I wanted something bright and optimism. We talk so much always in the negative. We talk so much in negative words that label. Yeah, and I wanted something that was bright and optimistic.
But it definitely is bright, Eunice. I mean, you can't get any brighter, can you?
No.
I think what's important is that it's a really a valuable addition to the the books that we've got in early years. Yeah. And I definitely would suggest anybody working in early years to buy or, you know, get Eunice's book from your library if you're at university or college, and have a read, because it really does talk about, it positions you as a practitioner, doesn't it, Eunice? And really kind of gets you thinking about, you know, the complexities of child protection in the early years, which is brilliant. Eunice, are we likely to see anything new from you coming up?
I've just had a chapter published on the invisibility, but that's in brackets, of children in the child protection system,
right?
Globally and in this country. And I've got another chapter coming out in something. And I've got a few journal articles that are in the mill around child poverty, because for me it's that holistic thing. You can't separate safeguarding and child protection from poverty, from child development, from all of those things. You have to understand the whole child and the context in which they're living. Yeah. So I'm very eclectic in the things that I do. But I want our youngest children, our youngest citizens in our country, to have the best possible family and early childhood experience that gives them the solid foundations so they can have the adult lives that they want. But I know that's just aspirational.
So that leads us kind of on to, it's kind of off the back of that question, really. So, you know, I've said that, you know, you're very much a voice within the sector, and you do keep on going, Eunice. You know, we see you as part of lots of advisory groups and panels, which is fantastic. But are we likely to see anything else from you in the near future?
Who knows?
You don't know. Okay.
I think my life is not where I thought it would be. I'm doing things that I never dreamt possible ever that I would do. I fundamentally believe that we all have power, and it's how we use that power wisely, and that our egos don't come in the room ever, and that our professional safe places forward. There are times, aren't there, where we all have to dig really, really deep, and there is a time when you have to move on. And I think part of what I see myself at the moment is still advocating for children, because that is the heart of everything I do. But it's also passing the baton backwards, and using what I'm doing, I hope, in a way that might benefit children, because ultimately that's the centre of everything I want to do. So for example, leading on and engaging with the Early Childhood Studies Network to develop the early child graduate competences, that has passed the baton backwards and forwards, because it's reinvigorated, it's given new life, it's given new purpose, it's really made the early childhood studies degrees think about what they're doing. And I think I have a role there, in really enabling others to take the journey forward.
Yes, definitely. And I think what the graduate practitioner competencies have really done is really put that practice at the heart of what, you know, and the rigor and the research and the academic.
Yeah.
But actually, it's about what you're actually doing with the child.
Yes.
And that is what they're about for me. Yeah. That's what I've taken from them. And they're really, you know, they've really made that program so robust even further.
And what I hope, and I'll talk about that when you ask me our hopes. But what I wanted to show was this: if you lead by from behind and you lead in a democratic way that engages everybody's voices, you can change practice very quickly. Yeah. And we change practice within a few months. And within a year's period, we have changed practice in 28 institutions.
And it was done on a democratic
Very much so.
You know, you did lead it, but it was done very much with
done democratically. I wrote them, I did it. In fact, we've just found one more spelling mistake in the thing. They've grown. They've given purpose. But I wanted to, there is no good doing the research if you don't use that research and your knowledge to actually shift and do things. Because the policy's there, the developments have been made. We have to own those and shape it as we want to.
I agree.
Anyway, that's
it is. I mean, you're talking to the converted here, so, but it's lovely for everyone to hear your passion and drive. And basically, those graduate practitioner competencies are a game changer. So I think it's really, really important that if anybody wants to look at them, they're on the ECSDN website, Eunice, aren't they? So people
and they're on the quality assurance one. They're about strengthening and giving us a level sixness, you know, raising the profile constantly of those working in early childhood. You know, they are holistic, so that they're strengthening those going out into practice to have that real holistic understanding. And that real challenge of the skillful application of knowledge to practice and practice to knowledge, so that you're constantly growing and evolving. I think that comes back to what you just said. Obviously, I've been around a long time now. But I learned something
new. I never said you've been around a long time now.
I learn something new every day. And so I'll just give you this little pearl that one of my PhD students gave me last week, which is around just tilting the diamond. So, or the crystal, just tilt it in a different way and look at it in a different way, and you see a different ray, you see a different vision. And I think that's what we do need to do with early childhood. What is this about? Why am I in the job? And how are we going to strengthen strengthen outcomes for our youngest citizens?
Right, we've got a couple of minutes left, so I want to try and get question six in. So I ask this question to everybody, Eunice, but everyone gets exactly the same question. So question six is, if you had three wishes for the sector, what would they be?
Right, my very, very first one for the sector that I see, which is the flexible space of early childhood, is that we in England have a 10-year policy led with finances agreed for 10 years. And obviously it's got to be reviewed, but change takes a generation and more and more and more. We cannot continue having repeated changing in ministers, civil servants, etc., and have to start all over again. And so we need a Secretary of State, or we need a minister that is around that cabinet table, that is ensuring that the child's voice and that of the family and the community is there. And a really consistent approach to, you know, shifting things. That can't happen in the short term.
No, I agree.
My second one would be around the graduate competencies, actually, that I really hope in decades to come, having started from the bottom, started with the voice of our students, children, and those working in early childhood studies degrees, that we have an early years profession that develops. Something different, a new genre of professional, which I hope that emerges and grows in a traditional way that professions do. So it grows and much more akin to the European social pedagogue, much more akin to what happens when you're working much more closely with children and families and understand them, and with a real strengths approach.
Lovely.
To them. And I really struggled with a third one.
Okay.
So many levels.
So you don't want to win the lottery then, Eunice?
No. I think my family would quite like me to give them some time occasionally, having to say that here. I really hope and wish that people will tilt the diamond, will look differently, and will realise that children and families need us to be working collectively, together, in partnership, real partnership, and that they are centre stage, because their lives carry on. We're only a little blip in them. And that within the early childhood education and care sector, that people really, really appreciate and realise the importance of continual professional development, that, it's not a one-off, and that actually we really need people to be having qualifications and understanding and the knowledge beyond level three. In the sector, because what we can see is that there is a huge difference when people engage in education and have that serendipity, and realize that it's okay to move on. You can start in early childhood and you can end up somewhere else. I started off as a social worker. I'm still a social worker through and through. I'm still registered as a social worker. I still do a bit of practice. But I focus my life in a different way now. And so for me, that third one really is around raising the status, the issue, and, all the issues that are around in early childhood about pay, professional hierarchies that exist, and that people really understand the importance of investing and actually do it in that conception to eight period.
Eunice, can I just say you've really got even me thinking, so I think everybody that's going to listen is going to hopefully take away something about their positionality as a practitioner, as a professional, and how they can probably, your famous words is always about changing the script, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I use that all the time, and I always say, if Eunice Lumsden was here, she'd tell us to change the script. But thank you so much. And how have you found it, Eunice? How have you found doing your first podcast?
How have I found it? Difficult, actually. And hoping that it's made sense. I think what's good, I want people to realise it's not easy.
What's good is that people will hopefully communicate with you on your social media platforms. And if they've got any questions, they're more than happy to do that, aren't you? You're more than happy to.
And challenge. We all experience the world differently. We all have it. But I think for me, my guiding principle has always been that we all have power, but it's how we use that power that's really important. And so for me, my team laugh at me and about me golden threads, but I hope always running through things that I do is that I can see the power that I have and try and use that positively in an anti-oppressive way for people. And why that's been shaped very much by my own experience of difference and being a woman. Of parents, one was English and one was Sri Lankan, and how that has shaped me to understand what it's like not to be part of the crowd.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I've been given these opportunities to open my voice far too much. But I hope people will see that the words don't come easily, the thoughts don't come easily, and that it's a continual journey. Okay.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the hashtag Team Early Childhood podcast, Eunice. And I'm going to give you a clap from me because I think you've been absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much. And everybody, if you want to have a chat with Eunice, you know, constructive challenge, or you feel that actually, yeah, I fundamentally believe, then Eunice, you know Eunice's place on social media. They're more than happy to contact you there. Thank you so much, Eunice.